Chapter 55. Sane nature would have cried indecency at such a trough. Alexander, time would have tinkered that, and he was well disposed to wait a while, but the one test he had no temper for was the apparent slight of unresponse accorded his impatient overtures by our suspensive poise of policy. Empress Mother, a backward answer is our country's card, the special style and mode of Muscovy. We have grown great upon it, my dear son, and may such practice rule our centuries through. The necks of those who rate themselves our peers are cured of stiffness by its potency. Alexander, the principle in this case, anyhow, is shattered by the facts. Since none can doubt your policy was counted an affront, and drove my long ally to Austria's arms, with what result to us must yet be seen. Empress Mother, may Austria win much joy of the alliance. Marrying Napoleon is a midnight leap for any court in Europe, credit me, if ever such there were. What he may carve upon the coming years, what murderous bolt hurl at the rocking constitutions round, on what dark planet he may land himself and his career through space, no sage can say. Alexander, well possibly. And maybe all is best, that he engrafts his lineage not on us. But, honestly, Napoleon nonetheless has been my friend, and I regret the dream and fleeting fancy of a closer tie. Empress Mother, your regrets are sentimental ever. That he'll be writ no son-in-law of mine is no regret to me. But an affront there is, no less, in his evasion aunt, wherein the bourgeois quality of him voraciously peeps out. I would be sworn he set his minions parleying with the twain yourself and Francis simultaneously, else no betrothal could have speeded so. Alexander, despite the hazard of offense to one? Empress Mother, more than the hazard, the necessity. Alexander, there's no offense to me. Empress Mother, there should be, then. I am a Romanov by marriage merely, but I do feel a rare belittlement, and loud laconic browbeating herein. Alexander, no, Mother, no. I am the Tsar, not you, and I am only piqued in moderateness. Marriage with France was near my heart, I own it, what then? It has been otherwise ordained. A silence. Empress Mother, here comes dear Anne, speak, not of it before her. Enter the Grand Duchess, a girl of 16. Anne, alas, the news is that poor Prussia's queen, spirited Queen Louisa, once so fair, is slowly dying, Mother. Did you know? Alexander, betraying emotion, ah, such I dreaded from the earlier hints. Poor soul, her heart was slain some time ago. Anne, what do you mean by that, my brother dear? Empress Mother, he means, my child, that he as usual spends much sentiment upon the foreign fair, and hence leaves little for his folk at home. Alexander, I mean, Anne, that her country's overthrow let death into her heart. The Tilsit days taught me to know her well, and honor her. She was a lovely woman even then. Strangely, the present English Prince of Wales was wished to husband her. Had wishes won, they might have varied Europe's history. Anne, Napoleon, I have heard, admired her once, how he must grieve that soon she'll be no more. Empress Mother, Napoleon and your brother loved her both. Alexander shows embarrassment. But whatsoever grief be Alexander's, his will be none who feels but for himself. Anne, oh Mother, how can you mistake him so? He worships her who is to be his wife, the fair Archduchess Marie. Empress Mother, simple child, as yet he has never seen her, or but barely. That is a tactic suit, with love to match. Alexander, with vainly veiled tenderness, high-souled Louisa, when shall I forget those Tilsit gatherings in the long sun June? Napoleon's gallantries deceived her quite, who fondly felt her pleas for Magdeburg had won him to its cause. The while, alas, his cynic sense, but posed in cruel play. Empress Mother, bitterly mourned she her civilities, when time unlocked the truth, that as he had choked her indignation at his former slights, and slanderous sayings for a baseless hope, and wrought no tittle for her country's gain. I marvel why you mourn a frustrate tie with one whose wiles could wring a woman so. Alexander, uneasily, I marvel also, when I think of it. Empress Mother, don't listen to us longer, dearest Anne. Exit Anne. You will uphold my judging by and by, that as a suitor we are quit of him, and that blind Austria will rue the hour wherein she plucks for him her fairest flower. The scene shuts. Scene V, Paris. The grand gallery of the Louvre, and the salon care adjoining, the view is up the middle of the gallery, which is now a spectacle of much magnificence. Backed by the large paintings on the walls, are double rows on each side of brightly dressed ladies, the pick of imperial society, to the number of 4,000, 1,000 in each row, and behind these standing up are two rows on each side of men of privilege and fashion. Officers of the Imperial Guard are dotted about as marshals. Temporary barriers form a wide passage up the midst, leading to the salon care, which is seen through the opening, to be fitted up as a chapel, with a gorgeous altar, tall candles, and cross. In front of the altar is a platform with a canopy over it. On the platform are two gilt chairs and a prie-dieu. The expectant assembly does not continuously remain in the seats, but promenades and talks, the voices at times rising to a din amid the strains of the orchestra, conducted by the Emperor's director of music. Refreshments in profusion are handed round, and the extemporized cathedral resolves itself into a gigantic café of persons of distinction under the Empire. Spirit sinister, all day have they been waiting for their galante show, and now the hour of performance is on the strike. It may be seasonable to muse on the 16th Louis and the bride's great aunt, as the nearing procession is, I see, appositely crossing the track of the tumbrel which was the last coach of that respected lady. It is now passing over the site of the scaffold on which she lost her head. Now it will soon be here. Suddenly the heralds enter the gallery at the end towards the Tuileries, the spectators ranging themselves in their places. In a moment the wedding procession of the Emperor and Empress becomes visible. The civil marriage having already been performed, Napoleon and Marie-Louis advance together along the vacant pathway towards the salon care, followed by the long suite of illustrious personages, and acclamations burst from all parts of the grand gallery. Spirit of the Pitties, whose are those forms that pair in pompous train behind the hand-in-hand half-wedded ones, with faces speaking sense of an adventure which may close well, or not so. Recording angel reciting, first there walks the Emperor's brother Louis, Holland's king, then Jerome of Westphalia with his spouse, the mother queen, and Julie queen of Spain, the Prince Borghese and the Princess Pauline. Beauharnais the Vice-King of Italy, and Murat King of Naples, with their queens, Baden's Grand Duke, Arch-Chancellor Cambaciers, Berthier, Lebrun, and, not least, Talleyrand. Then the Grand Marshal and the Chamberlain, the Lords-in-Waiting, the Grand Equerry, with waiting ladies, women of the chamber, and others called by office, rank, or fame. Spirit of rumor, new, many, to imperial dignities. Which, won by character and quality in those who now enjoy them, will become the birthright of their sons in after time. Spirit of the years, it fits thee not to augur, quick-eared shade. Ephemeral at the best all honors be, these even more ephemeral than their kind, so random-fashioned, swift, perturbable. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.